From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
An Illinois state representative is resigning after an ex-girlfriend filed a revenge porn complaint against him.
State Representative Nick Sauer from Libertyville has served one term in the state legislature, up for re-election in November. But revelations in Politico today have forced him to resign.
He is also the subject of Legislative Ethics Commission and Chicago police investigations, in which Sauer is accused of posting photos of a former girlfriend on a social media account to meet men online.
Well, another scandal involving a state lawmaker and Governor Rauner taking some action on some legislation this week. We'll talk about a couple of the bills that he signed. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. And our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, back from his vacation. Charlie is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in studio, Daisy Contreras. She covers the State House for Illinois Public Radio. We also have at our State House Bureau, Brian Mackey, IPR State House editor, and John O'Connor's our guest this week from the Associated Press. He's a political writer for the AP. And John, it's good to have you on once again.
Always a pleasure, Sean.
Well, I mentioned the scandal, and I'll throw it to the folks at the State House first. A lawmaker from Northern Illinois, Nick Sauer, stepped down this week. He was a Republican House member. John, what happened there?
Politico broke the story that a formal girlfriend of Nick Sauer, who's a first-term Republican from Lake Barrington, had filed complaints with the Chicago Police Department and the Legislative Ethics Inspector General, the Inspector General for the legislature, that Sauer had taken explicit photos of the woman whom she had sent to him privately and posted them on a fake Instagram account under her name, as a means of engaging other men in conversation on the social media platform. The complaint became public through this published report, and the House Minority Leader, Jim Durkin of Western Springs, immediately put out a statement saying that Sauer would resign. So it was clear that he had asked Sauer to resign later that day. That was Wednesday. Sauer did submit his resignation.
And John, are there any charges filed against him at this point? Anything criminal that's been alleged here?
No, nothing that we're aware of. And it's the woman said that she had begun a long-distance relationship with him from California in 2016 after they met on Tinder, which is a dating app, and it was during this time that they were in different parts of the country that she said she sent these intimate photos to him. She moved to Chicago the spring of 2017 to be nearer to him, she told Politico, and the relationship ended in March of 2018. It wasn't until early July, that a man whom she previously did not know contacted her and said he had been communicating with someone on Instagram who purported to be that woman, and that's when she became aware that these photos were out there. But as she said, Sauer had posted these photos as a way to bait men into sexually explicit conversations. Sauer would not respond to any requests for comment from the Associated Press, so we don't know what his response is to these allegations. There is a state law that took effect in 2015 that prohibits what's called revenge porn. And in this day and age of social media, this is a prohibition on the posting on social media explicit photos of someone without the permission of the subject of the photos. The idea being that if I want to get back at an ex-girlfriend, I may have explicit photos of her and post them for all the world to see. This is now a felony, which carries a penalty of up to 3 years in prison and a $25,000 fine.
And it's my understanding you don't even have to really prove that you had intent to harm the person. You just have to be proven that you actually shared these images. So while, you know, I think, Sean, you had asked, are there any criminal charges? We have heard reports that there are investigations going on, not only the legislative inspector general, but also police investigation. But as of yet, there have not been any criminal charges. But, you know, there is the possibility if some of these allegations are founded or law enforcement authorities determine that they have enough to move forward, that is something that could come later.
And of course, everyone is innocent until proven guilty.
Absolutely.
But Brian, I think it was interesting how quickly Representative Sauer did step down from this. And of course, it is an election year. He was up for re-election because in the House, they're all up for election every 2 years. John alluded to the fact that this likely came with some nudging from Republican leaders. In this whole Me Too era that we're in, and as highly charged as that has been over the last many months with the Illinois Capitol, I'm sure Republicans, and I would guess you would agree, were probably working behind the scenes to try to get him out as quick as possible.
Yeah, it seems. I mean, it's obviously something you want to get ahead of, and it's interesting though because we have seen various people take different approaches to whether or not they resign right away when you know, quote unquote, Me Too allegations come forward. We saw the House Democratic chief of staff who was accused of really just sort of making inappropriate comments about the appearance of some of the women who worked in the House clerk's office, the nonpartisan staff, and, you know, not taking his responsibilities seriously, making jokes about harassment training, things like that, resigned immediately. But we've seen other state legislators who have been accused of inappropriate behavior persist. State Senator Ira Silverstein, you know, decided to stick around, and he ended up losing his primary election, so he will be out of office at the end of this year or early next year. State Representative Lou Lang was also somebody who had accusations of inappropriate behavior. Now, there was immediate pushback, not only by Representative Lang and others about that, but you know, they did not choose to act nearly as swiftly as we saw with Representative Sauer this week. So you know, people can make of that what they will. It seems like the House Republican leadership, though, was eager to have this behind them.
Well, I would argue that Silverstein is the outlier. He was the first example of allegations of this type in Illinois after the so-called this resurgence of the Me Too movement last fall that started with Harvey Weinstein and spelled the downfall of many powerful men in media and politics and entertainment. Now, this is the first time that the Republicans have had to face this, but I think that their reaction was, I should say the Democrats' reaction in the past was very similar. In the case of the House clerk, Timothy Mapes, or in the case of Lou Lang, these were situations where the Democratic House Speaker, Michael Madigan of Chicago, had already last winter faced allegations of his own, not against him personally, but that he had not properly managed allegations of sexual harassment against campaign workers in his political organization. So he was on the defensive last winter. So when Lang or Timothy Mapes, these situations came up, it's cut them loose immediately.
Although Lang has his legislative seat, he just resigned from the leadership position.
Absolutely.
In the House.
Which is pretty...
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And Governor Rauner has also made sure to remind people that, you know, this is, you know, for him, at least, he's saying that this is a Madigan problem. Earlier in the week, Governor Rauner, in an unrelated event, he was asked, you know, if he thought Sauer's departure was the right thing to do. And he said, yes, it's right for him to step down. But then he deflected and went ahead and said, well, Michael Madigan has nurtured a culture of abuse at the Capitol. And, you know, as John said earlier, this is the first Republican that we see being accused of these sexual allegations. And the speaker later said that he's committed to making sure that they're creating a positive culture and an environment in the Capitol.
I think Charlie's always said this is always, you know, the way women have been treated at the Capitol, that's been bipartisan through the years. And so we were waiting for something to come out about a Republican because we had seen so many things happening with Democrats. This is not one party or the other.
No, but
it should
I would
be
say
noted
that
this is quite different from whatever culture there is at the Capitol, mm-hmm. because what I referred to, the bipartisan stuff, was guys being obnoxious to women, hitting on women all the time, grabbing, that kind of thing. Not, of course, back in my day it didn't exist, not posting nude photos of someone online. And Sauer is hardly part of the culture. He's been here, what, not even mm-hmm. 2 years mm-hmm. yet. And he was Bruce Rauner's appointment to the Illinois Tollway Authority. So in a sense, he's Rauner's guy more than he'd be Madigan's guy. But
yeah,
he's an outlier because, in my mind, it's bad enough to be obnoxious around women. But to do something as sneaky and underhanded and deceitful as posting pictures of someone, that just, to me, is beyond the pale.
And Charlie, we've always said through the years, we've said in Illinois, the scandals tend to be, you know, financial. Somebody graft. Somebody's tending to try to line their own pockets off the taxpayers' back or something like that. And it's not been as sexual. I kind of feel after the past year or so, we can't really say that anymore.
Oh, no. It's the, what's the best way to put it? The sexual type stuff always existed in the past, the harassment, the... what would you say, boorish, uncouth behavior of some men towards women, women who were lobbyists, women who were staffers, in some instances, women who were lawmakers. But it was always overshadowed by the dollars. It was, I was at a national conference one time, and somebody was mentioning how in Illinois, your guys don't mess around with all this high school level sexual stuff. They're in it for the big money.
And John or Brian, I mean, going back to what Daisy had mentioned, Governor Rauner's response to all of this week, it seems to me like he could have left his statement at, you know, yes, I think the representative should step down. I oppose this type of activity, of course, you know, and I'd look down upon that. And then to add the political angle that he tried to put into it with Speaker Madigan, that seemed to backfire a bit.
It struck me when I saw that, and I had planned to, and then asked the governor's office about the fact, as Charlie mentioned, that Sauer was an appointee. Sauer's a school board member. Then he was a county board member. He was a rising star. He's only 35 years old. He was on his way up. And clearly he had caught the attention of Bruce Rauner before he entered the legislature, Rauner appointed him to the Tollway Board, a part-time job that pays $31,000 a year as of July 1st of 2015. So I think that Rauner kind of felt the pinch that this one, you know, he wasn't just a random member of the legislature who happened to be a Republican, the governor's party, but that he did have kind of a vested interest in this one.
And, you know, it just fits in keeping with his, you know, it was sort of a coup, I think, in the way he stayed very disciplined on his message, which is basically blah, blah, Madigan, blah, blah, Madigan. And if you watch the Chicago, if the only way you get your news is to watch the Chicago TV reports, which I like to keep up with, because that is how probably a plurality, if not the majority of voters in Illinois get their political news. That's what you saw the governor saying, blah, blah, Madigan, blah, blah, Madigan, in a report about, again, a Republican accused of this behavior, and one who had gotten the imprimatur, or imprimatur, however you say that, from Governor Rauner in the past with his appointment to the Tollway Board. So it was it goes to show that this governor is very good about messaging, and he has a very clear message, and no matter what question you ask, he will find a way to make the answer, blah, blah, Madigan, blah, blah, Madigan.
Well, the governor is getting it from both sides, really, when it comes to this election, because he has J.B. Pritzker, of course, the Democrat that's running against him. He also has a couple of people, a Libertarian candidate and somebody on the Conservative Party ticket. It's called, and that's Sam McCann, who he has battled with, who has been a state senator from Central Illinois. This week, a union came out and endorsed both Pritzker and McCann. Maybe a little bit more surprising to see that McCann gets that endorsement in this race, because I'm sure there's some Democrats thinking, you know, he could pull some union votes away from J.B. Pritzker. That could hurt him. Anybody else see it that way?
I look at it as being, yeah, that might happen. But on the other hand, I look at it more as, and as the leader of the union said, about half our members are Republicans anyway. This is an alternative for Republicans who are conservative, the people who voted for Jeannie Ives, who would never vote for J.B. Pritzker in a million years because of his social stance on things like abortion and on immigration and the other hot-button issues. But on the other hand, they can't stomach Bruce Rauner either, because his position on those issues is pretty similar to Pritzker's. Those were the people who voted for Jeannie Ives. Now they have an alternative. If they're in the union, they can vote against Bruce Rauner, who, for all his pledges that, he believes in workers and all that, is the most anti-union governor the state of Illinois has seen in my lifetime. And if you're a conservative Republican on social issues, here's a guy that you can go to. You're not going to vote for the Democrat under any circumstances, but here's an alternative. I can vote for Sam McCann. He's talking my language. He's supportive of labor. And he's also conservative on these hot-button issues that are so important to my heart.
And, Brian, which union are we actually talking about here?
This is Local 150 and their international, which are operating engineers. These are the people who they do a lot of construction work, running cranes and bulldozers and excavators and things like that. And they are a very politically active union in Illinois. They've been at the forefront of opposition to Governor Rauner. They helped try and defeat him back in the 2014 primary. They were trying to encourage people to vote for somebody else to keep Rauner from even winning the primary back then. And they've continued to fight back with not only political contributions and supporting people like Senator McCann, but also with a legal strategy. They've filed lawsuits against the state for the way they've handled some things regarding labor relations. So this is part of a long piece, a very politically active union. But, you know, it is an interesting one because it, as I think it was Charlie who pointed out, they do have a significant number of their members who vote Republican regardless of who the leaders endorse. So this is an interesting strategy they're pursuing. And, you know, we'll know how it turns out in November.
And Daisy, from Sam McCann's perspective, now here's a guy that doesn't have a lot of money compared, certainly, to who does, compared to the other candidates, you know, the Democrat and the Republican. And I, you know, unlike people like us or people who really follow state politics, there's a lot of folks who don't really know what's going on, yet they're not paying attention to the election. They may get around to that a little bit later. This is a pretty big deal for Sam McCann, I would think, just to have his name in front of those members, but also to get mentioned on shows like this and to get out there that he's getting this type of endorsement.
Yeah, I mean, he came out with his own third party, calling it the Conservative Party, and, you know, and I think he's getting that edge, wanting to get those conservative Republicans who went for Ives during the primaries and you know, wanting to get them to come to him. So that base that Rauner really wants, I think Sam McCann is trying really hard to appeal to them as well, like Charlie said earlier.
Well, it's not just politics necessarily. The governor has been taking action on legislation. And Daisy, let me stay with you because you covered this week a measure that the governor signed, this one having to do with medical marijuana, and it involves schools.
Yeah, so the measure is named after 11-year-old Ashley Surin. That's where the idea came from. She suffers from leukemia and epilepsy, and she uses patches infused with cannabis oil to keep her medical conditions in check. And when she was in school, she was not allowed to have them or her parents to give her those patches during the school day, which she needed. So the family ended up suing the school district in order to get permission to do this. And so the bill would allow parents or guardians give cannabis-infused products to their children during the school day, as long as it's in a private location. Could be the school bus, could be somewhere away from other children.
So basically the parent or the guardian do they have to go to school to administer this? The nurse cannot do this, right?
Unless there's permission, but okay. The bill strictly says somebody with permission, so parents or guardians at school.
And John, I know you followed this as well. What is amazing to me is this passed pretty overwhelmingly. I'm not sure, there might have been some opposition, but not a lot to it. And the governor, you know, matter-of-factly signed this bill, made a thing out of it. There was a time, and it's not been that long ago, this would have had people kicking and screaming, you know, on at least one side of the argument. Does this show that this whole marijuana debate has changed dramatically in a very short period of time?
Unquestionably, this is a minor deal compared to the broader issue of what, you know, ultimately builds up to the legalization of recreational marijuana. That's many, many people, including the House sponsor on this issue, Representative Kelly Cassidy, a Democrat from Chicago, she has legislation to that is building momentum, many people think, but it isn't quite there yet, to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. So if we're that close, many people think that that's inevitable. Many states already allow recreational marijuana. So if we're that close to recreational marijuana, this idea is kind of a minor piece, as in Daisy's report this week, she had a comment from Senator Christina Castro in the Senate. She's a Democrat from Elgin, saying that children, you know, this means allowing them to have this cannabis infused product allows them to be in school in many cases. Without it, they would not even be able to attend school. So if it works for them, it should be law. Now, the law also allows for school administrators to prohibit the use or the administration of cannabis-infused products if it might cause a disruption in school or expose other students to the use of the products. Perhaps Daisy can comment on that. I'm not sure, you know, how much leverage a school administrator might have in outlawing it based on that language.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but I mean, it's important to clarify that the child must have been cleared to use the product by the state's already medical marijuana law. So if the child is not cleared, if the parent is not cleared to be able to give the child the product, then, you know, they can't have it on school grounds.
Well, typically, these would be very activist parents. These are parents who are very – so if there would be an administrator who outlawed it, he or she would probably face holy heck from a parent whose child needed the product.
Well, also, and what would be more disruptive, having a parent there putting a patch on a kid's arm or having a child suffer an epileptic seizure in class?
Right. I mean, and, you know, and it's interesting, during session while legislators were debating this, one of the biggest, I think, for opposition was the amount. The amount of THC was not being actually written in the law, in the piece of legislation. So they were more worried about how much was being given to the child than just the idea. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody was very supportive about being able to provide these kids with the medication that they need in order to be able to function during their school day, like a normal 11-year-old. And it was just the question of how much is being given, and can we say and specify that?
Well, presumably it has to be given pursuant to a prescription, right? And presumably the doctor would have to prescribe a particular dose, and so that would be regulated in that fashion.
Exactly.
Well, if a young kid can use it at school, I think, like John was saying, it's a small step to get to a point where a otherwise law-abiding adult can make the decision to use recreational marijuana and be taxed for it and everything else. So it does seem to me like it's moving that far ahead. We're only a couple of minutes left here, and Brian, let me go to you. The governor also signed a piece of legislation this week, a little bit more quietly. This was called talking about something called payroll offshoring, and it basically is to try to add some transparency into at least the governor's staff and how much money is being spent on staff. Explain what this was all about and what does this legislation do?
Yeah, this is was an initiative championed by Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza, who has sort of been a thorn in the side of Governor Rauner since she won a special election to that seat a couple of years ago. And this basically will end a long-standing practice. I know it goes back at least to, I think, Governor Ryan's administration. Charlie can correct me. It may go back even further. Where instead
50
of
years.
Okay, well, there you go. So it goes back
Governor
to
Walker, who's
to, I'm sure Shadrick Bond offshored some employees, probably. But so basically, instead of the, you know, you have the state budget that's like, here's how much the state police gets, here's how much the prisons get, here's how much the governor's office gets. Except the governor can sort of put people technically on the payroll of other agencies so that it looks like he can come out and say, I have cut the governor's office budget by 10% over my spendthrift predecessor. Aren't I a great governor? Look how efficient I'm being. Meanwhile, some huge share of his staff, about half I've seen, are, you know, on the payroll of these other agencies. So now what this law says is that if you're going to work in the governor's office, primarily for the governor, be a policy advisor or deputy vice assistant chief of staff for whatever, you have to be on the governor's payroll. So look for, I think, I'm guessing in next year's budget, I haven't looked at the effective date of this law, but that we're going to see probably a pretty big jump in the size of the amount of money that the governor's office is going to have.
Well, according to the comptroller, of the governor's 110 office employees, his staff, only 47 of them were paid from his office budget. The other 63 came out of other agency payrolls.
And
Mendoza said that if all those people were in the governor's office where they belong, his payroll would have been around $10 million instead of just $4.5 million.
In fact, in August of 2015, I wrote a story that showed that all of the people who answered to the governor, their payroll totaled $8 million, but the governor's payroll, the governor's budget payroll, was only $4
million. And also the governor did indicate when he signed this legislation, he thought it should apply to all the constitutional officers. So we'll see if that possibly happens. I don't know how much is going on there, though, in those offices.
Not a heck of a lot.
Let's go to our notes from the field.
Red herring.
Notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you this week.
Well, one of the things that the governor signed was legislation to create an Illinois Route 66 Centennial Commission to make plans to celebrate the 100th anniversary of that iconic route in that highway in Illinois history from Chicago to California. And the 100th anniversary is in 2026.
Daisy?
Yeah, so officials from Illinois are calling on President Donald Trump's administration to halt the release of blueprints for making a gun with a 3D printer. The U.S. Department of State allowed a company to share their 3D gun blueprints with the public. So Attorney General Lisa Madigan and U.S. Senator Dick Durbin have both signed on efforts to urge the department to reverse that decision and make it stop.
All right, well, we'll leave it there for this week. That will do it for State Week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and the AP's John O'Connor. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and find us on NPR One. The production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.